And welcome back to this special edition of It's a New Day here on 1180 AM WFYL. You're listening to our Education Roundtable on this last day of September 2014. And what a busy hour that first hour was.
It really was.
I mean, we dealt with the history of education. We went into Common Core. We talked about various legislation that happening or even not happening with Common Core itself. And in the second hour, we're going to look at options to the aforementioned. Is we're going to look at a Christian-based education, Christian schools, charter schools, cyber schools, and homeschooling. So we're running the whole gamut here, folks, from the state to the private educations, and so we might as well just jump right into the fray and get things going once again. Is on our line from the talk about the founding on truth is Dr. Peg Lessex, founder and chairman of Founded on Truth. Oh, I'm kind of losing it there for a second. But Dr. Lessex, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And what exactly is your organization and the Founded on Truth? Explain a little bit about that.
Actually, Founded on Truth is a pact so that I have total freedom of speech. And the premise is that this is a nation that was founded on a very fundamental truth, that the highest authority is not the government, the highest authority is God.
Mm-hmm.
We're founded on that. If you look at the Declaration of Independence, what they begin by saying is that we're endowed by our Creator with rights, mm-hmm. and that the purpose of government is to protect our God-given rights. If you don't begin with the premise that God exists and is a higher authority than the government, then the American Revolution was actually wrong. The only way you can justify it is to say King George was wrong. He was legal. He was, after all, a king. But what he was doing was wrong in God's eyes, and
well,
therefore had to be stopped.
In that mindset, then, what I call the American Terrorist Organization, the Freedom From Religion crowd, would probably go that route. And the whole idea is to remove God from everything that we're doing. But the restoring that, and as I pointed out in the beginning of the program, a little bit of the history, is that schooling was originally centered around teaching the Bible and writing about the Bible.
Yes. It was to enable our children to be able to fulfill their destiny as children of God. And so the reason that we educated children was so that they would first learn the difference between right and wrong, and then learn how to build the lives, futures for themselves and their families, so that they could, in fact, be children of God. They could be prosperous. They could pass on property. They could communicate truth and beauty. So education had a very different function. Now, did that mean that when you were done, you couldn't do a job? Of course it didn't mean that. But it meant that there was so much more to education than just workforce development. And what we're seeing in Common Core is a stripping away of everything but workforce development, which is a disservice to our children and our nation.
No, it is.
You know,
in fact, the fact that we look at these various schools where they're removing any type of God-related, even to the fact of a child goes to the school with a T-shirt that says, I love Jesus on there, they're going to ask him to remove it or send him out of the school. How do we get this back on track?
Well, you know, the first thing to remember is that we hire the schools. The schools are actually not in charge. The parents are. Children do not belong to the government. We do not lose our parental rights when a child crosses the threshold of the school. You know, it's interesting. I saw an email just last week of a mother who went to a back-to-school night, and the superintendent was explaining all the ridiculous things they were about to do. And as the parents complained, the super said, well, there's nothing you can do about it because the state has spoken. And I thought, do you want to bet?
Yeah.
Of course there is.
I'm surprised somebody didn't speak up and say that to them.
Yeah. You know, our children don't have to be in this building. Determining where and how our children are educated is completely within the purview of the parents. We hire the school, they are the hired help, to assist us with a piece of that. But if they don't do it right, we can and should fire them,
mm-hmm.
meaning we pull our kids out of schools that don't honor their responsibilities, that don't acknowledge we parents as primary educators and listen to and respect what we want for the education of our children. Thankfully, here in Pennsylvania, we have many options. Parents can choose a variety of private schools, both religious and non-religious. Parents can homeschool. Parents can choose other public school alternatives. We should be exercising those rights. When we look at the way that this nation was founded, it wasn't just that our founders said, oh, yeah, we have rights, and then went about their business.
Right.
They said, we have rights, and we are going to assert them. We are going to practice them and defend them and be sure that the government steps back away from our turf. Well, we need to do that with our schools right now today.
Yeah.
We need to remind them that, no, they are the servants here. We, the parents, are the people in charge of this picture. You know, I hear folks say, well, you know, I'm afraid to pull my children out. Really, if you hired a plumber to fix your pipes and 3 days later they were still leaking, would you be afraid to fire the plumber?
Well, so many people
are, too.
Of course
not.
You know, and you hear this in many different realms, and it's a very good point that you bring up with that, and which I like to bring out all the time, is even with what I call our elected employees, they work for us. We hire them to do. And I think more and more people need to understand that, and that, you know, just because your doctor's mad at you didn't have a test, that's his problem, not yours. So I think, Peg, you bring up some very good points there. And anything else you want to add before I let
you go? I know that in the rest of the hour you're going to be discussing those options. I would very much urge your listeners to listen carefully and not be afraid to select the one that works for them.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you for being on the program. Your input is extremely valued, and you nailed right in the heart of which a lot of folks, I think, with options need to realize is they need to take charge. That's your first option to do, and not be a lemming to the system, but be the person driving the system. Thank you again for being on the program.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
And you were listening to Dr. Peg Lustig, founder and chairman of Founded on Truth. And speaking of options and with the religious schools and an option itself is Christian schools. We've got back in the studio here, Ted Clatter. And, Ted, welcome back. You're like me. You have a cold, too, and we're kind of like the sick ward here.
we'll give it to everybody else.
Yeah, that's it. Well, Corinne's sitting over there.
I'm staying far away.
Yeah, stay far, far away. But Christian schools. Tell us about Christian schools, what they have to offer.
Well, they have a myriad of options available for every parent. Let's start with this, Bruce. The state law of all of the states of the United States does not require compulsory education. We require compulsory attendance. Now, that is absolutely, absolutely pivotal for a parent to understand, and it's part of Common Core. It's part of parental choices. It's part of everything that's embodied here. The state has an interest to make sure all children have a requisite number of hours during his life at that thing called schooling so that he is exposed to things where the commonness of our society has an interest. But, for example, in 1986, we were able to pass an act that dictates in state law that parents have the primary right and obligation to choose the education that is right for the child. And government, in any of its agencies and subdivisions, must stay out of course content, faculty, staff, and discipline at religious schools. So the nature of that act, which was 8 years of my life, as Keystone spearheaded that effort, is that, yes, there is an interest of the state to make sure children go to a place where education is occurring. And that's your list of options for this hour. They can go to a public school in any of its derivatives. They can go to a private licensed school. They can go to a private religious school. They can choose home tutoring. They can choose home education. And there's a difference between those two. But the nature of home education is very different. Compulsory education is different, because there you would have some superintendency over government to make sure children learn what is appropriate. That government would then have its foot in the door of determining what is right and wrong in what proportions for every person in the student body, and indeed for everyone who's in the Commonwealth. So when you come over to religious schools, you're going to have a plethora of choices available. The only thing that Christian schools have in common is that somebody might call them Christian. They can be varied in size. They can be varied in methodologies or pedagogies. They can be very different in curricular approaches. They can be very different in the totality of why they exist. And all of that is lawful because we have compulsory attendance. So, Bruce, if you want to be different from me, you can be.
No.
If you want to send your kids to a different school than Corrine, you may do so.
Well, don't they simply want automatrons in school? Is that what they're looking at, the child that just follows and marches in step?
Well, that really is where you're coming from when you get rid of plurality and more of the public schools, which used to be a local decision-making. All of that is now gone, and it's one size fits all, and it's top-down management from Harrisburg and from Washington. That is the exact opposite of what you have for Christian schools, because we were able to fight and win those legislative battles. So we are free from Common Core. We are free from one size fits all, and we have just a variety of things that we can do.
What about Ted, what would you say to those parents who say, oh, well, I want my kid to go to this public school because it's a great public school and that will help them get into a good college because it looks good that they went to this high school for education? What about that for Christian schools? How do they compete with that, you know, for college standpoint?
Well, let me just start with that. The nature of getting into school, into colleges and grad schools, is dependent upon who you are and how you are educated. Not based on where you went to school. I can give illustration. My own children went to a school that probably averaged 150 students, K through 12. Between my three kids, we've got two PhDs. We have a total of 5 master's degrees from all world-class universities, not just run-of-the-mill universities. You can go where you can go. If you are diligent in your studies through elementary and secondary school, it's not a matter that you need to go to a big school in order to succeed in a collegiate experience. Basically, when you come to Christian schools, maybe the principle is this when it comes even to privates. He that pays the bills determines the details. Religious institutions are there, and they are greatly subsidizing, on an average Christian school, somebody is subsidizing the expense for educating those children, and the parents are chipping in, but somebody is determining what they believe is really important for life. And Bruce, maybe that's a good definition for a parent. Education is learning what is important, or education is learning how to live. So there's a variety of opinions as to what is important. There's a variety of opinions of what is important for each child. And you even come through earlier in this hour where you had a citation that up to 20% of class time. And in my earlier segment, I had this available, but time flies, doesn't it, Bruce?
Oh, it does. It does.
In Harrisburg, many legislators I have heard from superintendents describing that the majority of classroom time is being dedicated just to teach kids how to succeed at a test. Parents need to realize that there is a huge difference between being an educated person and being a person who can pass a state assessment test.
Ted, great points all. Great points all. And I'd like to thank you for being on the program. You kind of pulled double duty today. And we do appreciate it. I've been listening to Dr. Ted Clater, Executive Director, Keystone Christian Education Association. Ted, thanks for being here.
Yes, sir, Bruce.
Now, on the phone is somebody that we know near and dear to us here at 1180 AM, WFYL. It's our own Carla Dedesi, who also has a program here on Fridays that you can hear from 8 to 9 called Family Matters. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning. How are you, Bruce and Corinne?
We're doing well.
We're great.
And excellent. Of course, Carla is calling in on us, knows this subject quite well. And since we're talking about options with education, we've talked Christian school, but Carla, you're going to talk about homeschooling.
That's right. I've been a homeschool mom for 13 years. My husband and I are a product of public school, and we had a marvelous education in our public school. However, so I'm not, we adore homeschooling, and there's multiple reasons for that. I'm also an author, a published author of conservative children's books, which encourage our kids and our families to follow our founding fathers' Judeo-Christian principles. Let's start out with the definition of homeschooling. Homeschooling is the practice of teaching one's own children at home. I personally dislike that definition because just yesterday I had my little girls out at Millersville University. We enjoyed a morning of beautiful classical orchestra music, and then we came home for lunch, and we immediately went out again to Morgantown to our speech and debate class. We came home for 15 minutes and went to tennis lessons. So, yes, some of us are home because we may have 6 or 10 little ones that we're homeschooling, but for some of us, as our children get older, we are not home very often. And in fact, that's why I personally adore homeschooling, because I believe that our whole entire world is our laboratory.
Well, Carla, okay? that's a very good point, too, because so much in any types of form of schooling, it's sit in a room, stare at a chalkboard, and get lectured to, but you're out, active, tangible, seeing different things, experience, learning different things.
Cultured.
And
absolutely. And we are sharing all different social backgrounds as well. Yesterday, my children were with 3-year-olds all the way up to 18-year-olds. So let me just begin with the history of homeschooling in this country. For as long as there have been parents, Bruce, we have had homeschooling in the home.
Yes.
Okay, that was the original way, and I know that you already talked about that, but then our country came in and said, listen, we need to set up schools, and the local community is going to choose those school teachers, and we're going to have these one-room schoolhouses, which are going to teach the 5 to the 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then so homeschooling was on the back burner for a while. Of course, we've always had a little bit of homeschooling because there's kids who have illnesses, they can't go to school. Or there's families that live in remote areas like Alaska, and they cannot get out to schools. However, in the 70s and the 80s in this country, there were families that started feeling like they could do a better job than the teachers, than the schools. They knew their children better.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, this is when our country, and specifically the state of Pennsylvania, started saying, well, you're just parents. How do you know what's best for your children?
Yeah, this gets into something I hear a lot of people talk about, where you have the teachers that think they can psychoanalyze a child as well.
Right, even though they've just been introduced to the child in September, it probably takes them about 3 months to get to know that child. Now they're going to teach them for a couple more months. Now they're going to wrap up, and then next year they're going to have a totally new teacher that's learning the strengths, the weaknesses, and, of course, they're learning 25 other students. And that's certainly a great advantage that we have to homeschooling, is that I know my child's strengths and weaknesses, what causes anxiety, what does not. So that is a great advantage. Let's go back to the 70s and 80s. Thank God that we had parents who were not afraid to go to jail because they said, we want to homeschool our children. I recently had the wonderful opportunity to speak for the Christian homeschoolers across Pennsylvania in Harrisburg regarding a bill, House Bill 1013, that I hope we have time to talk about, that everybody needs to call their senators and get that passed before November. But thank goodness that there were people back in the 70s and 80s that said, we want to homeschool our children. We believe that it's our right. We want that option. Because now today, in the 21st century, they were our pioneers. Now I can homeschool because they basically went to jail for me. So now we are trying to still, we're still very involved. I encourage people to go to CHAP, Homeschool Days at the Harrisburg Capitol, where we bring pies to all of our legislators. Hey, this is who we are. These are my kids. We want to break through that stereotype, which is actually an untruth, a lie, that we are not socialized well and that we're weird. That's actually, and I'm going to give you some quotes from U.S. News and World Report in a minute about that. So anyway, now, and let's go back to the 70s and 80s again. These people were pioneers. There were not curriculum fairs that they could go to. They were just going to their libraries or to their bookstores and buying things because there was nothing prepared. Now in the 21st century, I can go to large book conferences, curriculum fairs, and walk through thousands of vendors and handpick what I would like to teach my children, which is so very exciting to me. Now let's talk about some statistics that are so ridiculously exciting. U.S. News and World Reports is stating that there's an estimated 2 million children who are homeschooled in the United States today. On average, homeschool students in grades first through fourth perform one grade level higher than their public and private school counterparts. And I personally have experienced that with my little girls. By grade 8, the average homeschool student performs 4 grade levels above the national average. There's a book out right now called The Brainy Bunch. I highly recommend, if you're interested in homeschooling, to get that book and read it. Mm-hmm. And the number of families, Bruce and Corinne, is growing.
Yes.
At an estimated annual rate of 7-15%, and it is growing even more because we dislike Common Core, and we do not want the federal government telling us what we should be teaching our children. Now, let's go over to Common Core for a minute. I've had the pleasure of working with Pennsylvania's Against Common Core. The founder and CEO came to me a few months ago and said, Carla, there's so many people that are pulling their kids out of Catholic school, Christian school, public school, and they want to homeschool because they dislike what Common Core is pushing in the school. They're pushing an agenda.
Yeah.
He said, can you do a series of videos for us? Because they don't know where to begin and they feel very overwhelmed. And of course I said, absolutely, I would love to do this. So I would encourage you to go to Julia Learns on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. That is where I have my segments, my videos, and I'm just introducing you to how do you start homeschooling? What are co-ops? What are classes? What are competitions that are out there for us? Why do I personally love homeschooling? And also they're on the Pennsylvanians Against Common Core Facebook page as well as their website.
Right.
Now,
Carla, I got to tell you, one thing that I've found dealing in the history realm that I do, talking to a lot of youngsters that'll come through the various programs we do, is that the homeschool children are far superior in their knowledge, their questions, their conduct, is that you get those that are in the public school system.
And that's correct. And U.S. News and World Report just did a whole research article on that, and they said that there's myths about unsocialized homeschoolers.
Yeah.
They're all false. Most are very well prepared for life as well as college.
Right. So, Carla, I want to thank you for calling in. I've got two more guests that have come in studio. I've got to get to them. Ladies and gentlemen, this lady knows her stuff. She's good. And, she's a good friend of us here at the station. She has her own show. Carla Dudesi. Carla, thank you very much. God bless you. You're doing
thank you. Take care.
Well, in studio right now, I have two guests. Anthony McMahon, who is a math teacher of the PA Leadership Charter School, and also I have Dave Rossi, CEO of España. Did I pronounce that correct?
Esperanza.
Charter School in Philadelphia. And we're going to talk charter school and cyber school. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And if I could start with you, Anthony, charter school. Explain that, if you could.
So what Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School is we're an online public school with blended learning opportunities. So a charter school, we operate independently, but we receive public funding as well. This means that for us, all students, K-12 in Pennsylvania, are eligible to enroll at no cost to them. And this is a viable alternative that many families do choose because we offer flexible scheduling. The students can complete their schoolwork at night, in the daytime. I'm a math teacher. All my classes are asynchronous, so they can log on and complete them whenever they like. And I have availability for them to talk to me during the day, come in chat rooms face-to-face, call me. And also another plus about our charter school is that we have an individualized curriculum for students. It's actually teacher written. It's not a canned curriculum like you find at lots of charter schools and lots of online schools. Excuse me. And I write my own curriculum for all the classes I teach. And so what's also different about us, we offer blended learning opportunities for the students, which means that they can partially learn in person at our centers as well as online. Mm-hmm. And this is optional. So for middle and high schoolers, we have a center for creative and performing and fine arts. For them to come in, they can take classes 2 days a week and study graphic design, fine arts, dance, or theater. They can also perform that online if they'd like to or come in person. We have a university scholars program with for gifted students to take honors and AP classes. They can do this as well 2 days a week online or 2 days a week in person or online. We have school professional studies where students can choose from 15 career specializations. They can take relevant electives, and they earn a certificate at the end of it, and a leadership program, which students go on lots of field trips and do events in the community, which emphasize their leadership characteristics in the youth to try to develop them for the professional world in the future.
Well, Anthony, one thing that has been in the news, and especially out of New York, with the new mayor that they have, de Blasio, he's got a real problem with charter schools. Mm-hmm. And have you experienced that? What is the problem? Why do you perceive they have a problem with the charter schools?
I believe the perception is that since we are independently run but receive public funding, that there should be more transparency, I guess, and mm-hmm. more public input in the board of directors and in our CEO.
Mm-hmm.
But we are held to the same standards as the all public schools. Our students take the same tests and standardized tests. And
well, I know one thing that is a big thing in Pennsylvania here, and I don't know if there's much pushback against the charter schools and that, but up in New York, of course, a big indication there is their teachers' unions don't like it because your teachers mm-hmm. aren't part of the teachers' union, are they?
That is correct. We are not part of
the it could. That could be it right there. And, David, with your school, you are actually, you're a charter, but you're a cyber school. Now, what is cyber? That sounds like something out of the Sci-Fi Channel.
Similar to the school that was just mentioned, we have the kind of the history of Esperanza. Esperanza is a faith-based community organization that's been operating in North Philadelphia for over 30 years, back around the time when charter legislation was passed. Tom Ridge came to Reverend Luis Cortez Jr. and said, there's a need in North Philadelphia, in a population that's underserved, for kids to receive a quality education, and the need is really great in the high school. So we started with a brick-and-mortar high school back in 2000, expanded. Now we're a 6-12, so we have two sites. And then we also have a cyber school that started 3 years ago, Esperanza Cyber Charter School. And we were encouraged to go statewide with our brick-and-mortar program by the then Secretary of Education, who said there's some other outlets in Pennsylvania that maybe some populations that you guys are serving well, that there's a need for that. So the cyber school is kind of our statewide expression of what we've been doing in Philadelphia for over 14 years. Providing a quality education. Esperanza was founded by the Hispanic clergy, a group of pastors that got together in North Philadelphia, the Hispanic clergy, and said it would be great if we could do something more than just what we're doing individually in our churches. So that formed the institutions that were founded, Esperanza Cyber and Esperanza Charter School, that are both non-sectarian public institutions, but founded by a faith-based group that wanted to influence the public school system through the idea of charter legislation.
I have a question for both of you. You can, whoever wants to answer first. But have you seen charter and cyber schools you can answer individually grown in attendance in the past years, and why would you think that is if it has grown?
I think it has grown. I think if you look in, and I think some of it's geography and demographics, but if you look in Philly, there's estimated to be over 30,000 students just in Philadelphia alone on charter school waiting lists. Mm-hmm. Cyber charters are different because they're statewide, so most of them do not have waiting lists. For example, Esperanza Cyber Charter, we have open enrollment right now. Shameless plug, esperanzacyber.org, if you want to enroll your student into that. But from that aspect, we have the ability to enroll statewide, but in Philadelphia, there's caps placed on brick-and-mortar charter schools, and so most schools are at their cap, if not a little beyond that, and educating students for free beyond their cap. But the idea there is that there's definitely a demand.
So the charters, the cyber school is very similar then to what you see on TV, some of these colleges online type of thing where you can apply. So it's, so if somebody, let's say from Virginia, wants to participate in Pennsylvania, can they do it?
Well, actually, no. So for Pennsylvania, it's all students are in the state, go to state cyber schools. So the funding comes from the school district itself.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
We get our funding from wherever the students come from.
Right.
So if they come from out of state, we cannot get funding from them because they're funded, through their state.
Now, what about a student that participates in this and is having a difficulty and maybe on a, maybe in a math or something like that? What is it, just an email process of question back and forth? How does that work? How does the guidance and one-on-one to the student, let's say, happen?
So we have many programs. One of them is Bridge to Student Success, which we identify students that are having difficulties in the first semester already. I've already sent in my list to the school, actually, for this year of my students who are struggling, and these students are put in touch with their guidance counselor and to create a plan for them to work and
And at Esperanza Cyber, one of the things we do is we have synchronous and asynchronous. Asynchronous basically means that you're logging in and you're going through work. Synchronous could be you're doing live instruction, and what you're doing is you're guiding your students through the lesson, and they have access to their teachers that way as well, where there's live instruction and students can interact with a teacher, even though it's virtual. It's like you're in a virtual classroom online.
Yeah. Now, you might have mentioned this. What are the grades on this, from what to what, grade-wise? Maybe explain on that.
We have a pretty strict grading system. We have an A is from a 93 to a 97, and an A-plus is from a 97 to 100.
Okay.
An A-minus would be a 90 to a 93, and similarly in the B categories, it breaks down.
Right, because this is all new stuff to the people such as myself that computers are wonderful ways of giving you headaches. And so, to actually go to school and get graded on that with school is a concept I think maybe a lot of parents that are like myself, the old school, need to embrace. How would you entice them to say, hey, this may be a valuable option to go on? Because that's what we're talking about in this hour is options.
Yeah, so what our school talks is an alternative, a non-traditional school for non-traditional students. I say we have 2,500 students for 2,500 different reasons, and everyone's there for their own reason. And what it gives back to the student is the flexibility and ability to pursue endeavors outside of school and really follow their hearts and passions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I find does best in my class, mostly professional students who have a passion for life and really want to learn and come in there asking questions and engaging me as the teacher.
And I think agreed. I think what Esperanza Cyber does as well in the same vein is the idea of providing flexibility to students. It's also an option for students who have been through a poor educational system, and they may be overaged, undercredited. They may be looking for a fresh start to put behind everything that's been in their past and say, you know what, I want to try something different. Maybe they're being bullied at school. There's a whole
That would be one of the questions that I have. Is that you get children to go to school, and they're bored because it's not a challenge, and an option such as a charter school, a cyber, will actually challenge that student for to give them the to achieve.
And I think it's important to understand each child is so unique, so not everyone can sit in the classroom all day or do it. It's nice that there are these options for parents. Their children, they don't just have to send them to public school. I think many parents don't know of all the different options that they have, right. And each child needs an education in such a different way. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's great that there are these options, and it's important for parents to know.
Oh, it is. It is indeed. In fact, you know, if I were to come to you and say, sell this to me, okay? You've got an audience out there listening right now. You've got them interested. Sell it to them that this may be a viable option to them.
I think for Esperanza Cyber, and obviously just as PALCS does, we're statewide, and I think the idea is if you are unhappy with your current option and your son or daughter is in a brick-and-mortar charter school and you as a parent want more control, you want more interaction, you want to know more of what's going on, you can actually sit through the classes and sit through the instruction with your student and be in that classroom on a daily basis and have that closeness. Because we do believe the parent is the primary educator. We want to partner with the parent to meet the individual and flexible needs of each family and each student at Esperanza Cyber Charter School.
Mm-hmm. Do you gentlemen have any success stories that have come out of that you're aware of?
Just last year, we had students go to Juilliard and Princeton Ivy League School. So we're very proud of our graduates to go through these programs that we have for them, performing arts and honors programs. And we see a lot of success stories. And as people returning to the school, one of my coworkers was a graduate of Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School, and she speaks very highly of it.
So you'll end up getting people to come back, participate in the school that were once students of the school.
Yep.
That's a pretty good record of success.
Yeah, and we have board members that were former students of our schools.
Excellent. So, but any other things you want to add about your schools in there?
I guess let's get the websites for both of your schools.
Get those up.
So Pennsylvania Leadership Charter School would be PALCS.org. It's PALCS.org. They can find the information there on the application process.
And for Esperanza Cyber, it would be EsperanzaCyber.org, ESPERANZA, EsperanzaCyber.org.
Well,
great. Well, thank you, both of you gentlemen, for talking with us. We're going to be talking in just a minute here with Dr. Don Meyer, the president of Valley Forge University.
Right.
I want to thank both Anthony Mahone and Dave Rossi for talking about cyber and charter schools with us.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
That's fantastic. I mean, most people didn't know that was out there, let alone you could do it through your computer and bring things
well,
in.
Well, yeah, and with technology, I mean, we're not going to see it go away anytime soon.
No. In fact, you know, we've talked about on New Day a lot where de Blasio up in New York was going after cyber schools and charter schools simply because it didn't fit into the teachers union thing and the curriculum they wanted to teach, and we all know where that's going.
Mm-hmm.
And so the freedom there, which is a wonderful thing, and of course that's a constitutional thing, you know, the freedom to learn, the freedom to go is amazing, and this provides it. This provides it. There's a
absolutely
very valid option. So who do we have in studio now, Corinne?
Right now we have Dr. Don Meyer. He is the president of the new name for the university. It's Valley Forge University. So welcome to our studio, Dr. Don Meyer.
Thank you very much. Well, privileged to be here.
Man, we're going to be talking about higher education.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, before we get going, Dr. Meyer, tell us a little bit about Valley Forge University.
Well, we just completed last year our 75th year of existence. We were founded in 1939 as Eastern Bible Institute, located not too far from here. And then as the school grew, became Northeast Bible Institute, fourth year added Northeast Bible College. 1976, moved to our current site, which was a military hospital, Valley Forge Military Hospital. And that name influenced our name, which then became Valley Forge Christian College. And as of September 16, we officially became the University of Valley Forge.
Yes, excellent. I think we've done interviews with folks from your university, came in a while back, and we talked a little bit about it. But explain the university to our audience out there and the higher education that it's offered.
Sure. We are part of a network of Assemblies of God universities in the U.S., academic institutions. There are about 16 of those with 16,000 students. We have close to a little over 900 students on our campus, and we have 67 majors, undergraduate, 7 master's degrees, church vocational ministry majors, as well as marketplace ministry majors. And we're primarily a residential campus, although we're doing some very aggressive things with online education also.
Yeah, and kind of, it's an interesting flow the way the program has gone over the past 2 hours is that we've started off with just
Oh, literally the beginning of school. We've gone into
the beginning of education.
Education.
Yeah.
We've gone into the various grade levels and brought up through high school, the charter school. Now we're at the higher education. Mm-hmm. And what's the student body makeup? Do you know if they're coming off of these optionals, these schools that come in, or how many, you know, can you estimate how many are coming out of the public system? Maybe a little bit of information on that.
Sure. Our students come from just a very wide variety of backgrounds. As a religious institution with affiliated with Assemblies of God, close to 70% of our students come from, looking at the church lens, Assemblies of God. The others come from over 20 other different kinds of church backgrounds. We have students who come from the Northeast here. We are about 25% ethnic minority. Oh. And so it's reflective of the cultural mosaic of the Northeast. We have everything from homeschool students to traditional public school students, first generation students who come. None of their family members have been part of any college or university at all. And so it is a wide range. Some young people who have grown up in the church, they've been part of a Bible quiz program, and they almost literally have half the New Testament memorized. Others, they have been followers of Jesus just within the last year or so. So a wide range of variety of our students.
Do you notice a difference between those that come out of the public system and those that come out of the optionals, let's call it?
Because we have a faith commitment as part of our admissions process, the common denominator of our students is this deep quest, in addition to earning a college degree, but also earning it in a context which will nurture their spiritual faith. And so that common denominator, we have a daily chapel service that goes from 10 to 11 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Exit interviews with our seniors, and they will be asked, what did you like most about the school? Always top of the list, relationship with faculty, the professors. Right near the top of the list is that dynamic chapel service. We'll say there's nothing in the world like chapel at Valley Forge.
Yeah.
And so that common denominator helps encourage and nurture an atmosphere that has a similarity among our students.
Sure.
Dr. Meyer, could you tell us, since you're the president of the university, what are some of your goals for the university and for the students in general?
Sure. The probably a priority goal for them is that they will truly become all that God wants them to become in this precious short window of their university experience. Those 4 years changed my whole life. Tools for life and ministry, relationships, opportunities, networks, and so forth. And we want that for them. So that within them, not only will they maximize the acquisition of tools and skills during that time, but they will also grow in character to become the persons God wants them to become. So there is a character component, which is part of our curricular focus, but there is a competency focus. David says he shepherded them with integrity of heart, character, with skillful hands, competence. Just because I have good character doesn't make me a better golfer. And so the skills are necessary, but also the character as well. So it's both of those ingredients. And for us, it's Luke 2:52, Jesus' increase, wisdom, stature, favor with God and man. Intellectual, physical, spiritual, social. Everything we do in the classroom and outside goes through those four core development strategies.
I know it was definitely my college experience. Those 4 years are so important. There's a lot of big decisions to make, you know, where are you headed with your life? And I think your education there is just crucial. I mean, it really helps shape you into the young man and woman that you're going to be. So do you have any stories maybe of people, what you've seen them go on to do through their education with Valley Forge University?
Sure. If you walked into our main chapel, you would see there are 53 flags where we have alumni serving in 53 places of the world. Hmm. We always have one empty flagpole above our sound booth. And on the opening day, our missions convention day, I will say to our students, perhaps out of this year's graduating class, another country will be reached. It will be country number 54, and they count with me, 55, 56, and so forth. Our 53rd flag was given to us in January of this last year by Rachel Detroit. portfolio from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. We Skyped her in. I'm there in the chapel looking on the screen. She's up on the big screens, and she's telling us how she anticipated when she was a student of being able to present a flag of a country where we didn't have an alumnus serving. When I sat right there in that chapel service, I dreamed of that day. I've had graduates walk by when they shake my hand, and they will say to me, whisper, I'm going to bring you the next flag. And so that is a huge part of our culture. So our desire is that we will raise up leaders not only for here in the U.S., but around the world. And we really believe through them, change the world.
Yeah, and it sounds to me that along from the education, the higher education, you've got a motivation factor going on there, which I think is rare these days. You know, for someone to come up and say, I'm going to bring you the next flag.
Yeah.
That's great stuff.
It is so inspiring. In fact, our alma mater song, third verse, is about those flags. So we want it to soak into their very beings so that not only are they acquiring the tools, but that there truly is a passion to change the world.
Sure. Yeah, that is so cool because I think, at least for me, as soon as I became an alumni, I'm like, oh, you know, they're just going to want my money to support. But there's so much more to Valley Forge University once you're an alumni. It's this whole goal of going out, loving all, serving all, and not just reaching, you know, our great nation of America, but really, truly, I'm going to go out and I'm going to change the world. And that's such a great group there, being part of that community, no matter what year you are, to know that you can all make that difference. So I think that's really cool.
And we're trying to do that at a cost that is reachable for any young person. We are one of the lowest private colleges in the state of Pennsylvania. Our tuition is about the same as Penn State main campus.
Okay.
So from an economic perspective, which is an enormous burden and concern for families, is that there be a reachable college university experience from an economic standpoint so they will be able to graduate without enormous debt on the other side. Mm-hmm. And there are extremely intentional things we're doing about that also.
So you get students from all over. It's just not the Commonwealth, correct?
Correct, right. We a predominant number of our students, about 50-plus percent, are from Pennsylvania. That's often informed because of the Pennsylvania State Grant, which students are eligible for. But we have from about half of the states of the U.S., we have international students as well who are part of our student body.
And for folks to know a little bit more about Valley Forge University, is there activities outside that invite the public to come in? Hey, take a look at us. And various things like that, the open houses that you have, maybe elaborate a little bit on those.
Sure. We have ample opportunity, College for a Day. You can go to our website, valleyforge.edu, be able to get any information for coming and visiting our campus for a day. Also, we have personal visits, which we provide, breakaway events for high school students, no cost to them to come and visit. Anyone can stop in at any time and visit us as well on campus. We do also mainstream live our chapel service, 10 to 11. That's on our website. That's on the internet as well. And so access through the media, social media, is available, but also to come on campus at any time is available as well.
What is your website address?
It's just valleyforge.edu.
Okay. All right.
Great. Well, thank you so much for talking to us. We've been talking with Dr. Don Meyer, the president of Valley Forge University, talking about higher education, and this is helping us wrap up our education roundtable today here on 1180 AM WFYL. Thank you so much for being in our studio today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's great having you. Boy, I tell you, I feel like I've been through school.
I know.
I got a schooling today. I've got to say that.
In these quick 2 hours, we went from the beginning of education all the way up to higher education.
It has. And Corinne, you know, one thing that I've realized and looked at with all of this, what we talked about in the first hour, dealing with Common Core, and of course the history, brief history of the schools itself and the legislation, and then we get into the options that we just talked about with Christian schools, charter schools, cyber schools, homeschooling. One theme that I see in here, and especially when we're talking about the Common Core, the comment about that people are felt that, well, they have to answer to the school, and I think it was brought up quite well. I think it was Lisa that might have brought it up. You know, correct me if I'm wrong on that, is that, you know, they work for us. And I think the theme of the problem that we have, along from our elected employees, that don't seem to want to address it in the legislative end so much, except when they're up for re-election, they'll bring it up, or trying to run for office, as we're getting right now in this gubernatorial race, where one side is actually lying about what the current governor has been doing, and that is parents' involvement. I cannot get over the theme of parent involvement. We have so many parents nowadays that are, well, I'll just send the kid off to public school. They'll take care of them. You know, I'll feed them. I'll get my, they go run around the house, and I've got things to do, and that schools will take care of it. And that is probably the biggest root of the problem that we're suffering here. You know, how many times have I read on It's a New Day different quotes from our founding fathers about ignorance? And so many people are become ignorant. They tend to take things for granted. And I look at the fact that you had the child. You accepted that responsibility to raise that child and to pass it off to somebody else. What do you expect you're going to get?
Right, and I think it's important to know, too, even if your child goes to the best school and you're really happy with their education, it doesn't just stop there in the classroom. It's, you know, you have to figure out what is your child learning in school, what can you add on to that, because I'm sure there's gaps somewhere, and it's the parent's responsibility to fill in those gaps with stuff that they need to know about what's going on to really educate the child in the right way.
And I think what we need to do as a commonwealth, and also as a nation, is stop the what they're going to do, why are they going to do that, and start looking at what am I going to do.
Yes, absolutely.
And how am I going to correct this? If you get employees, if you own a business out there, and you have an employee that's not doing the job in which you hired him from, he's not your employee. He or she's not the employee any longer. You have removed them. You have that ability to remove. You need to bring these issues up to your politicians, your elected employees, as I call them, at their town halls, to have them address it. You are the boss here.
I think that's so true and so important, Bruce, because I don't know why. I guess we've gotten in this mindset of, oh, the schools are untouchable and we can't do anything to, you know, no, absolutely not.
Right. And it's showing quite well in this last hour when we talked about the options. You know, the homeschoolers.
Many options.
Yes, the homeschoolers are the boss. Are the boss. So it was a great 2 hours.
Great 2 hours with this Education Roundtable here on 1180 AM WFYL. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to remind our listeners, if you've missed any of this great informative roundtable, please head over to 1180WFYL.com. It will be up as a podcast. And as always, we love hearing from our listeners. Contact us. Email us info at 1180WFYL.com.
She's been a long two hours all over the place. But I'm Bruce Stocking.
And I'm Corinne Lillis.
And we'll see you tomorrow right here on It's a New Day on 1180 AM WFYL. Have a great day, folks.